with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
On the ground, tough play. Ortiz, barehand pickup. Got him! What a play to end this one. A three-hit shutout for the Brewers. They've won eight straight ball games.
Incredible finish to an incredible game. Ninth shut piece by the Brewers pitching staff this season.
On the ground is short. Ortiz, field, throws across. Got him! The Brewers hang on to an 8-7 victory. One swing from Ortiz, the difference. And they can go for a sweep tomorrow. Chavez Ravine, make it 9 in a row for the Brew Crew.
Just like last night, Ortiz puts the final out on the scoreboard.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eye.
The Milwaukee Brewers are the team of the moment. I don't care that Mike Esposito did them last week when he should have done the Red Sox. I can't do the Red Sox. They just lost two in a row. Who else am I supposed to do? It's the Brewers because they've won nine games in a row. They started off the year 25-28, and since then are 32-12. An eight-game win streak mixed in there. Now a nine-game win streak mixed in there. You know that Andrew Vaughn has joined them, having been called up 12 days ago. Yesterday, he reached base three times, drove in two runs. You know that Caleb Durbin, who they got from the Yankees in the Devin Williams trade, and Devin Williams has fallen apart completely as a Yankee. Caleb Durbin, sent down during spring training, has been recalled just before the season started through the first two games of this series against the Dodgers. He's got three extra base hits, including a home run on Friday. Got three RBIs. But it's their pitching, folks. It is the pitching. Over the last 30 days, the Milwaukee Brewers have the best ERA in baseball at 3.00. That's better than the Phillies, better than the Tigers, better than anybody. And it is remarkable what they do as a pitching infrastructure. That coaching staff, that org, what they get out of retreads, out of acquisitions, out of sign-in tweaks, however they do it, it is remarkable. This Quinn Priester trade, I mean, it's incredible. Priester the other night had three. It gave up just three hits, no walks, through six innings, 77 pitches, struck out the side twice, struck out 10 players. It was the Dodgers. The Dodgers. He struck out 10 Dodgers. And the Brewers are terrific. Yesterday, they fell behind 4-0. Freddie Peralta, not Johnny Peralta. That's a vestige of a different time. Freddie Peralta stayed with it, battled for a few more innings. And Peralta ends up, because the Brewers just fought their way to a lead, Peralta gets his seventh straight win. That is the most by a Brewer since Cal Eldred in 1992. And Freddie Peralta has 12 wins on the year, leading the league, which says a lot about the quality of the team, obviously, and about the fact that Freddie keeps you in ball games and he pitches deep enough. Pitches deep enough. Pat Murphy, their manager, who Boog Shambi says is 70 grade funny. And Murph says, come on, I'm 80 grade funny. Which is, of course, funny in and of itself. Says this about his team. About his team hammering away at the Dodgers, having been down 4-0 yesterday, eventually going up and holding on to win it 8-7. Quote, it's character revealing, just like a bunch of woodpeckers. You keep pecking away until they say the game is over. And yeah, there they are, just one game back of the Chicago Cubs. This is turning into a two-team race with the Reds 7.5 back. They've won 4 in a row. Maybe they're not going anywhere. The Cardinals have lost a couple in a row. They're 8.5 back. But man, those Brewers, winners of 9 in a row, a run differential of plus 84, that dominant pitching over the last 30 days, just one game back of the red-hot Cubs. These are two of the best teams in baseball. Amazing. fun. Should make for a chaotic second half. Lots of games between the two, including the 18th of August when there'll be a day-night doubleheader. Fun fact about the day-night doubleheader between the Cubs and the Brewers on the 18th of August. That first game will feature a national anthem sung by me. The one that I was supposed to do a few weeks ago got rained out. They didn't play that night. I didn't sing that night. But they will. They will get rescheduled and play that game, and I'll get to sing the anthem on the 18th of August. So excited about that. Anyway, so the Brewers are the team of the moment. What's up, everybody? Good morning. It is Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel, here with you. Lots of stuff coming up, but man, the phone lines are hopping to talk trade deadline, to talk baseball in our exciting two-team town in the midst of a Cubs-Red Sox series. When the broadcast crew for Fox yesterday, AJ of the White Sox, Wainwright of the Cardinals, Amin of the Bulls, I mean, amazing. Adam Amin, just a wonderful guy. Got a good hug in the press box from Adam Amin. To the phone lines we go. And we talk to Derek in Wisconsin. First up this hour on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. What's up,
Derek? Hey, Matt. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I've got just some comments. The whole Paul Skenes thing, that's just not realistic. My thing is this. I think Matt Shaw should remain up with the ball club. My comp to him is Jackson Holliday, right? Hmm. If you look at how Holliday did last year, they had to send him down a couple times. But Shaw's not going to learn anything. I don't think he's got any room for development in the minor leagues where he's facing MLB-quality pitching maybe once every couple weeks. He needs to be up in the majors. And I look at it like this. This Cubs team, their offense is good enough for playoffs. They're one of the top offenses in the league. They don't really need, you know, yeah, could it be better at third? Well, if Shaw develops, you've got that covered. What they really could use is two things. They get a pitcher. So if you get one more pitcher, that'll always help you out in a playoff run. And I think Owen Casey should be off limits. He's your insurance policy, a young, controllable contract. If you don't sign Kyle Tucker, Casey takes his spot, and you've got a young team, a good offense, good pitching, and then you're kind of insulated against if there's any impending strike. You're not having these huge contracts where guys aren't playing, right? So I think that's the way to go. I don't think offense, I think just watching this, especially this first four lineup that's really tore into the Red Sox last couple of days, I think the offense is fine. I think you can afford to have less than an all-star at third base. And if you develop him, just think that that'll help you kind of long-term as well. So I think if you look at Shaw kind of like a Jackson Holliday finally clicked this year, and it's a for the betterment of the team. I don't think third base is as important as people think it is. Pitching, if you could get rid of Alcantara and maybe a couple other prospects and pick up another pitcher, I think the Cubs would be set.
Thank you, Derek. Good stuff, man. Appreciate it. I'm not sure about the Jackson Holliday comp specifically player to player, but in terms of the development, I hear you. And they can survive. They have been surviving. They've got the best record in baseball with the number 30 production out of that position. It's crazy to think how little they've gotten from there and just how good they are. So I hear you, and I understand. I do agree that Owen Casey and Kyle Tucker are tied together in terms of what the possibilities are, because it's scary to think of trading Casey and not signing Tucker. By the way, the Brewers scored the first four runs in the top of the third, and then Peralta gave up four to the Dodgers and allowed that game to be tied. And onward they went until the Milwaukee Brewers held on for the 8-7 win. They went up, they were up 8-5, gave up two in the bottom of the eighth to make it tight. And then McGill, it just was another dominant ninth. That dude has 23 saves. But yeah, so had that wrong in terms of the Brewers falling behind, they allowed it to be tied. Thanks for the call. Good stuff there. We continue. Mike is in Northbrook on the score. What's up, Mike? Welcome in.
Yeah, how you doing? First of all, thank you for that event on Thursday with Ozzie Guillen. That was, I was able to sit next to him and talk to him, and I just had a great time up at the Four Winds with him. It was a real treat.
That's really cool. Hang on, Mike. Yeah, that's really cool. That was the pool party at Four Winds with Ozzie Guillen and with Leila Rahimi. That's awesome. We're doing cool baseball stuff all season long. I'll tell you about something I'm doing with Michael Bush on Wednesday in a couple of minutes. But keep talking, Mike. What you got?
So talking about the upcoming trade deadline, the White Sox have a lot of good young players that have come up and have shown that they can play Major League Baseball, and they're young and they should get nothing but better. And they have a ton of prospects down on the system from some of these trades they've made that are looking good that are going to be coming up. So you got the following guys. You got Luis Robert. You got Talkman. You got Benintendi. You got Hauser, and I may be missing somebody else. Do they all have to be traded for more prospects? Don't you need to keep some veteran presence to go with your young guys? I mean, and I'm not so, you know, Robert shows a lot of obviously abilities defensively and running, and he's starting to hit a little better, and he's only 28. Who cares about the $20 million in the next couple? The guy's probably still going to be a hell of a ball player. Why do you have to trade all these guys for more prospects unless they're guys that can come up and play right away and look good? I mean, I think we're overstuffed with prospects. Just wondering what you think about that.
Yeah, you're not overstuffed with prospects as position players. You're just not. You need a lot more because some of these guys are good, but they might not be great. Edgar Caro homered from the right side for the first time there in Pittsburgh. I like Edgar Caro, but there's not a ton of pop. You know, so it's like I enjoy Caro and I enjoy Teal, and maybe you're good there, but if somebody offers you a great catcher, you'd consider it. But is Colson Montgomery really going to be that Corey Seager comp you dream of? And just overall in terms of the math and the puzzle pieces, the way you got to put it together, the way that you're describing it, I don't think you realize just how many you need to get good. So you're not sure which ones are really going to develop and which ones you might then have to turn around and flip. Maybe you got to turn around and flip some of the ones that you have to get specific pieces that you need at some point. You're still a ways away, even though you're playing better and you're seeing some nice things out of what, the 10 rookies that have debuted. Are you up to 11 at this point? You're still pretty darn far away. So you need to restock. You don't have to trade all of them, but you better trade Hauser. Bunch of scouts in attendance yesterday in Pittsburgh to check him out. If you don't want to trade Savali because you need because you're getting something out of having a veteran to eat innings, cool. You don't necessarily have to trade Talkman. He can be your everyday center fielder once Robert is gone. I like Mike Talkman an awful lot, and I don't know how much you'll get for him if you were to put him out there. So, no, you don't need to deal all of them, but you do need to deal some of them because you need a bigger pile of prospects than what you have. Ron is on the south side and is now on 670 The Score. Ron, what do you say?
You are so correct. Luis Robert has to be traded. And then, this is the thing. When you trade him, who plays center field? So to the last call, appreciate the optimism, but the White Sox do not have a lot of position players ready to come up through the minor leagues. They have who's here. And something that me and Mully agree on once a week, it's not enough. And it's going to take time. So, you know, they have to trade. In particular, it's just time for Luis Robert to go. But the main thing I was calling, you know, by my favorite segment, Team of the Moment. Steve, one of the reasons I really enjoy when you do it, 2 weeks ago when you chose Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
And it's not only the wins or how many wins, but you give the narrative and you describe, you know, what the reasons why you chose. And that's what I really look for. Actually, when I'm trying to pick my teams, you know, looking for something, some nuances. So I just have to say that. Now, last week, HB.
Yeah.
So usually, you know, I put my team down before I listen to you. Hey, but in speed. I don't have it, but speed.
Yeah.
Guess what? I'm taking that Red Sox last week. Love Mike Esposito. When he took the Brewers.
He blew it.
Speed. Hey, man, this is a protest vote. I said, no, Ryan, you take. And then when you came, because the Red Sox had won 10 straight.
Yeah, no, they won 9 in a row. What's this bro doing?
So, man, I had put down the Red Sox and my man Mike, we talked. And he said,
"Yeah,
Milwaukee Brewers." And the last thing.
Well, hold on, Ron. As long as we're going to rip on Mike Esposito, let me share
that. Mike.
So do I. Let me share the private text that Mike Esposito sent me as I was suffering through my throat infection last week and couldn't do a hit and run. He texted, "Feel better, man. We saved Boston for you for Team of the Moment for next week." LOL. We used Milwaukee due to Cubs proximity and the sweep of the Dodgers. Hope you bounce back quickly. So he made a nice gesture trying to leave Boston for me, and here we are just destroying the man in the next week.
It's the last thing. Hey, but let me tell you.
Yes.
The Brewers have to be pretty good because you chose the Brewers 2 weeks ago, Speak. And guess what? Your rule is, which I know you probably not going to really be able to hold to that, is you try not to choose
the same team. Wait, so I chose them 2 weeks ago, so now it's 3 weeks in a row for the Brewers? Oh, my God.
I have the paper in front of me here.
Ron, I'm falling apart.
And I chose the Astros. I had chosen the Astros.
Yeah, you know.
And it's just the team.
It's embarrassing. Here's the deal, Ron. From now on, I got to run it by you. I got to run it by you. I mean, seriously, I'm going to have to call you at the beginning of the show and see what you think. That is embarrassing. I feel like I've fallen apart, but we will soldier through. Ken is in Menominee Falls and is now on 670 The Score on Hit and Run. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning. Great show. Hey, my Saturday and Sunday mornings, when I want baseball knowledge, I listen to 670 The Score. Besides getting some up here in the Milwaukee market with my good buddy Tim Allen, who does the Brewer postgame show, you guys are fabulous with the knowledge that you put out, not only on your teams, but just teams in general. I had the good fortune of being able to spend some time with the Brewers at spring training with my business on Wisconsin Sports. And I'll tell you one thing, Pat Murphy is a breath of fresh air in that clubhouse, the way he keeps our team loose. He is a jokester in front of everybody. He's constantly messing with the media. If you know who Tim Allen is, I'm sure you do, Speaks.
I do.
Tim is blind, and a lot of people don't know that. And Murphy messes with him the whole time at spring training. Whenever he's doing an interview, he'll yell, "Whatever he's saying to you, Woodruff, don't believe it. He ain't seen a game in 20 years." You know, he's always hollering stuff out. But he's just the guy that he has complete control of his clubhouse. And the respect that he commands from these young players, as well as the veterans, is incredible. But you know, the whole pitching staff, the way that they work with Green and with Hook, you look at pitchers around the league that came from Milwaukee. They're still having success, you know, no matter what team they're on. But how they go ahead and evaluate talent is incredible. Matt Arnold, what he has done, and hang on now, Chicago. I know we're on your heels right now. But there's a good chance that they're going to pass the Cubs.
Whoa! You know, Ken, I got to tell you, thank you for the call. Appreciate the thoughts. Appreciate your perspective as a business, as an insider, as a friend of the aforementioned Tim Allen. But there's a limit to how many nice things can be said about the Brewers on a Sunday morning on Hit and Run. There's just a limit. I said a lot of nice things about the Brewers. It didn't go over well with some people. It didn't. And now you come on and you start saying all these nice things about the Brewers. It's enough. It's enough already, Ken. Thank you for understanding and very much appreciate the call. But the Brewers are doing wonderful things with Priester and with McGill and guys like Grant Anderson. Like, they've really rebuilt a whole bunch of people in that bullpen and on that pitching staff, and that is a skill set. It should be said, the Cubs are also doing very nice things with Chris Flexen and Ryan Brazier and Matthew Boyd and Brad Keller and Caleb Thielbar and Colin Ray and Drew Pomerantz, who's going to be on this show at about 11:45 or so. We'll talk to Drew Pomerantz on this show. So both of the organizations are very good at that, which is one of the keys to the modern baseball world. What the Cubs have to get better at is development, and they are working at it. They just had their draft. The system is pretty darn good, but let's get into it in detail. Let's get into this Cubs system, what they do well, what they don't do well, which players should be considered to be kept, maybe considered to be fungible in terms of the trade deadline coming up? Let's talk about it all with Brian Smith from Bleacher Nation at Cubs Prospects on Twitter. Brian Smith joins us next on Hit and Run right here on The Score.
You really have to follow closely to understand. Here's a little shallow fly ball to right. Owen Casey coming in, slides, and he made the catch, inning over. Owen Casey feet first to take away an RBI from Christian Cairo. He's getting it done in every aspect of the ball game.
Highlight courtesy of MILB TV. Owen Casey with the catch. Matt Spiegel with the radio show. 670 The Score with the station. Brian Smith with the Cubs prospects breakdowns over at BleacherNation.com. Does a terrific job and joins us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Brian, welcome in to Hit and Run on a Sunday morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Love the work that you do. And this is a moment where we can look backwards and forwards here in the nether regions of the middle of the season. Go backwards first. What was most notable in the big picture in your mind, Brian, coming out of the Cubs draft? What was most notable to you?
Yeah, I think, you know, baseball draft obviously doesn't have a use of trading draft picks, but what the Cubs essentially did was they traded down with their first round pick. They gave Ethan Conrad $3.5 million, which basically means they traded down 10 spots. And to do that, they traded up essentially with their sixth round pick, who's a guy named Josiah Hartshorne, who they're going to give top 50 money to, I believe. And so, you know, I think a lot of their draft was about that sixth round pick and a bet on this big high school kid with a bunch of power.
That's interesting, just conceptually, because it used to be, you know, like Theo and Jed and Jason McLeod kind of reinvented the draft mindset in Boston when they were by paying guys over slot, and then the rules got changed when they got here. Is this move that you're talking about, this is something that's still available to do within the rules? Are a lot of teams trying to do that kind of thing, game the system a little bit?
Absolutely, yeah. You get a pool of money, and you can kind of spend it how you want within a certain framework, and teams will play around with that. The Cubs, you know, most notably did that when they gave Kyle Schwarber, you know, less than slot money, and then they saved money to get Justin Steele and a couple other guys later in the draft. And so, you know, I think when that succeeded in the way it did, that became a framework that they go back to pretty often.
That's a pretty interesting combo to think about. I didn't realize. We should think of Steele connected to Schwarber in that same draft conceptually. That's kind of fun to think about.
Totally.
Yeah. So where are they as a system in your mind in terms of their ability to develop? What do they do really well as an organization in terms of developing prospects?
Yeah, it's an interesting time in the system. I think they're sort of probably like a more middle of the road farm system now that they've had the guys graduate that they've had this year. And I think that they're going to be a pretty polarizing system around baseball when teams start talking about specific prospects with them. I think there's going to be guys that some teams really like, but then the same guy might be valued a little lower by other organizations. Overall, I would say that, you know, since Craig Breslow was here and now Tyler Zombro, those are the guys that sort of ran the pitching development for the Cubs organization in the 2020s. They've gotten a lot better in the pitching department. And so now, you know, in the Theo Epstein era in the 2010s, that was a real weakness for the team, was developing pitching. I think they're actually starting to see some real gains there and be like thought leaders within Major League Baseball, which they definitely were not 7-8 years ago.
That's interesting. So what are some of those thoughts that they get thought about as being sort of leaderish about?
Yeah. So when Craig Breslow was here, the Cubs were big on what's called a cut ride fastball, which is, you know, if you think of Justin Steele's fastball, it's a perfect example. And so they thought that that was a market inefficiency. So they targeted pitchers that had those cutting fastballs. I think now, you know, what specifically Tyler Zombro is looking for is something that we'll see in the next couple of years, but he has a facility, called Tread that pitchers come from, and they understand pitching development about as well as anyone in the country. And, you know, I think for an example, like the kind of curveball that Ben Brown throws is something that you're going to see a lot more pitchers try to adopt if they have a certain sort of way that they grip the baseball. And so, we're just going to see a lot more, fitting certain pitches to specific pitchers and sort of what their bodies ask for. And that's what you're looking for these days in baseball.
Yeah, you are. And then everybody's out there trying to find cast off arms and turn them into bullpen killers. They seem to be better at that than they used to be, Brian.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you're having Pomeranz on the show later, and what a good example of a guy that they sort of found that had been out of baseball for a long time. And, you know, another guy with a cut ride fastball that is having a ton of success, and it might be in the low 90s, but it's going to get a lot of hitters out just because of the qualities it has.
You know, Jed said something interesting when we asked him about that on Spiegel and Holmes a couple weeks ago. He said that because counsel is part of the acquisition process, there's no disconnect in terms of throwing somebody right into the fire. Like, as soon as he got Pomeranz, he's like, all right, let's see what he can do. Oh, let's do this. Oh, let's put him against a good guy. And then, like, and so within, like, you know, a half a week, like, he Pomeranz was like in the circle of trust. It's kind of remarkable, and I can tell you how many times, Brian, I've been around managers where it's clear they don't necessarily believe in somebody they've just been handed. So I think that's a big deal.
I mean Daniel Palencia to me is one of the stories of the season for Craig Counsell specifically, because that was a guy that did not look confident on a major league mound the last 2 years. And like, if there's one thing that jumps out to me about Palencia, it's just how confident he seems. And I think that was created by Counsell trusting him in that closer role when Porter Hodge got hurt in June, I think it was.
You know, I'll add to that. Yesterday, just happened to be talking to Freddie Quevedo of Cubs PR, who's also their translator. And Palencia is so much more comfortable using English this year. So it's so much more comfortable talking about, remember after the St. Louis game when Contreras got in his face for no reason at the end of that game in St. Louis, he did an interview in English, like a kind of a tricky situation, but was comfortable doing it. So hand in hand, those kind of confidence and comfort issues, kind of, you can see him in person and on the field too. Brian Smith from Bleacher Nation is with us here talking prospects. Okay. Who would you hate to see dealt the most in a possible deal for Merrill Kelly or Zach Gallen or Seth Lugo or Sandy Alcantara? Who would hurt you the most?
Yeah, I think the guy that teams are going to ask for the most, and the Cubs are really going to have to hold a firm line about, is a pitching prospect they have named Jackson Wiggins, a second round pick a couple years ago that has really hit this year and has broke out. And, you know, I think that the way that cost-controlled pitching is valued in the game right now, giving up a guy that has sort of the ideal ace frame and throws 98 and is actually starting to control the baseball now, he's the one that I think would hurt the most because of, you know, where the Cubs starting pitching is right now. I don't want to see them giving up a guy who could be a real significant starting pitcher in a couple of years.
Interesting. So I think of Jackson Ferris, who they gave up in the Michael Bush trade, just because there's a lot of Jacksons, but that's a lefty.
Yeah.
Wiggins is a prototypical big power righty arm. So yeah, so I was expecting you to go to talk to me about Casey, but Wiggins is the guy that you think that is going to just really excite a lot of those teams, especially if they're giving up a pitcher, they could see themselves going to get one. And these days, like, how far away is Wiggins? How far away should a pitcher who throws that hard be these days as teams are getting more aggressive than ever?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting question about, you know, how many bullets do you want to waste a guy throwing in the minor leagues? Especially, you know, injuries are an inevitability for pitchers, and so you don't want to waste too many bullets. I'll tell you, an interesting thing about Wiggins is that he sat out the last 3 weeks from what I told was just a load management issue, and then came back yesterday, first game back in a while, and only threw 2 innings in Double-A. So there's two thoughts there. He's either just slowly being built back up, or is he moving to be considered a reliever for the second half in case this is a guy that comes September, they decide to call up because he's sitting 100 miles per hour.
Well, oh man, I know Jed is that guy who gets enamored of those kinds of things and thinks about doing it. Well, that's interesting. Look at you. So you're always looking at the load management and the usage for possible usable pieces. That sounds like fun that you're having as you look at that.
Brian. Yeah, I mean, Cade Horton going today, you know, I mean, that's something that we're all going to have to think about in the second half with Cade. And, yeah. You know, he's going to be passing an all-time record for him of innings in a season. And, you know, when do the Cubs start to get a little nervous about that number is I think, one of the real stories of the second half.
Yeah, I think they're just going to lean in, man. I think they're going to lean into that guy, like who's a great athlete. And this is the moment. This is the moment where you have to lean into that kind of thing and use your asset in that way. What's Ben Brown been doing? What's his usage like, and how's he looking down in the minors?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't end up getting a ton of run in AAA. I think he got down there. I want to say that they did some work behind the scenes, not necessarily in game action, and worked on some stuff. And then he pitched a little bit for Iowa. But, yeah, interesting that he's coming back up. I think, I think he might make more sense as a starting pitching option than Chris Flexen, who I think just had too much success in that long relief role that I don't think you want to mess with it too much. And I like that they're going to give Ben Brown another shot here.
So Brian Smith is with us here from Cubs Prospects, at Cubs Prospects from Bleacher Nation. What would your reaction be if Owen Casey goes for a pitcher? I don't think he can go for a rental, but if he goes for somebody like Lugo, who's got another year on a contract, or if he goes for Alcantara, who's got two more years on a contract, it's something like that. What does it do to your gut as a guy who has watched Casey for a long, long time?
Well, I think you nailed it. I would feel okay about trading Owen Casey in a deal for a guy that's going to have more than half a season with the Cubs, then I would feel not great if it was for a rental. He's a little too good of a prospect to trade for a rental. We just don't see top 100 prospects traded in that way anymore. But, you know, he would also, I think, make sense in a deal for a guy who has some control behind him, because this is the best Cubs outfield, you know, probably of my lifetime right now. And so they're pretty flush in the outfield department. So, you know, I think that it would make some sense to trade Owen if he's being properly valued by another organization.
If Casey gets dealt and they don't sign Kyle Tucker, who gets a shot at right field from the system next year?
You know, I don't think it would come from the system if it goes that way. I mean, Kevin Alcantara's, you know, he's right there in AAA and he's theoretically ready, but, you know, I don't think a Cubs team that would have real ambition next year would throw Alcantara in an everyday role. So I think if Kyle Tucker goes, they're either going to sort of go with the half Crow Armstrong Suzuki outfield, or they're going to add another guy externally. I don't think the system will necessarily replace that if Casey's gone.
Should they be comfortable dealing Alcantara? Should they be comfortable dealing James Triantos if he's desired? Like, who are the non-Casey players that could go and they should feel okay about?
Yeah, I mean, I think Alcantara and Triantos are two guys that have been around for a long time. People know them because they're top 100 prospects. Alcantara will be... he'll be out of options in 2027. And so that's a guy where the pressure to get him into the major leagues and starting to acclimate is going to start to be felt next season. And so it would make sense to trade him to an organization that can call him up to the majors now and start to get him some run and you know, start to make the adjustments that he's going to need to make in the majors. And then Triantos, you know, he hasn't had the best season, so his value has fallen a little bit. But he's going to have to be added to the 40-man roster at the end of the season, and that's going to sort of impact his clock and when he has to reach the majors. And so those are two guys who I think they've fallen a little bit from a trade value perspective, but you know, they're plenty talented that some teams are going to try to buy low there, I think.
So the dream is to know your guys so well that you can capitalize when other teams have their esteem risen for guys that you actually think have all sorts of problems. So I know it's a very specific route that I'm asking you to think about, but is there anybody who might be thought of more highly by other teams than by the Cubs themselves?
Yeah, an interesting guy that jumped out to me there is Christian Hernandez, who, if you remember, was their big sort of bonus baby a couple of years ago out of the Dominican Republic. And he was drawing absurd comparisons back then as a 15 and 16-year-old, and then had a slow start in the system. But the last year or so, the last calendar year, he's been really solid. He plays a really nice shortstop. If you watch him, if a scout goes and watches him in batting practice, they're going to see that a guy that has a bunch of raw power still that doesn't really translate to a game. But he steals a bunch of bases, really fluid athlete. And the Cubs have a good number of shortstops they like. And I think there's a few shortstops in the system they like a little better than Hernandez. But it would not surprise me if another team sort of fell in love with what he's doing in South Bend this year and prioritized getting him in a trade. And that's where I could see a match happening.
I was just going to mention a South Bend Cub less than 2 hours away, really like an hour and a half away. I've never been to that stadium. I'm going in a couple of weeks. I can't believe I've never been there. Fun place to watch a game, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you gotta go hang with Brendan King, the announcer there. It's a great experience. And, you know, any of the listeners right now, like, it's a great place for kids.
That's cool. Well, we'll bring ours in a couple of weeks. Brian Smith, this was fun, man. We'll do it again. Appreciate the knowledge.
Yeah, very much. Thank you very much.
You got it. That's Brian Smith at Cubs Prospects. Brian Smith from Bleacher Nation. Top of the hour, we're going to check in with James Fox on all things White Sox. Speaking of the White Sox, I had a chance to talk to Lucas Giolito. And you're going to hear from that a little bit later on, too. Phone calls continuing as well. 312-644-6767. It's Spiegs on Hit and Run on the Score.
Very special day.
High fly ball, deep left field, way back, still going, and gone! Matt Shaw with a pinch hit home run. And the Cubs extend the lead 4-0 over the Red Sox here in the seventh. That was a shot for Shaw, his third home run of the year.
You know, he throws a lot of sliders, curveballs, and a lot of slow stuff. But really just trying to stay ready to hit, you know, kind of just really own my move forward and be on time. And, I think he threw a splitter that I hit. So just kind of able to stay through it and hit home run.
That is Matt Shaw talking about his home run. And good for him, man. To see that homer, to see that joy yesterday. On Friday, he had a single, that kind of like a seeing eye single that got through the infield. And he did like the most minute little sort of half timid dance while standing on first base. And I was like, oh God, he's just trying to feel good any possible way that he can. I get it, but man, it's not. It doesn't look very engaged. But then yesterday, Matt Shaw go boom. Matt Shaw go boom. And if you look right now, all around Major League Baseball at third base production, the Cubs are dead last in the following categories from the third base position among all 30 teams. They are 30th in hits, home runs, RBIs, batting average. Let's see, on base percentage. Oh, no, they're 28th on base percentage. Slugging percentage, yep, dead last. And then OPS, yep, dead last from the third base perspective. And yet they are the best team in baseball by record. So go figure it out. So how aggressive do they need to be to go out and get Eugenio Suarez or some other third baseman? How aggressive should they be for pitching? That seems to be a much more popular topic, and understandably so. The phone lines we go. Caleb is in St. John, Indiana, and is now on Hit and Run with me, Speaks. What's up, Caleb?
Good morning, Speaks. How are you, my friend?
I'm delightful on a Sunday morning with a first-place team. Let's go.
Oh, it is lovely being a first-place team. You know what's not first place in my eyes? The pitching staff. We got to get an Edward Cabrera, and here's a hot take for you. I like Bobby Miller from the AAA team for the Dodgers.
Man, Bobby Miller has incredible stuff, but has never put it together. Local guy, too, Bobby Miller. And who got hit? He got hit in the head. Remember, he got hit in the head by the line drive at Wrigley. It was just kind of brutal.
I do remember that.
And then there's Cabrera. Cabrera's the results have been good, and the stuff is intriguing. But yeah, I know too much. I know too much about Edvar Cabrera. Consider me not interested. This is Louis from Southwest Michigan, who is now on Hit and Run. Louis or Louie? Louis.
Louis is good.
Okay. Welcome in. How are you?
Hey, listen. I'm great, man. Thanks for the show. Listen, the Cubs are going to beat the Brewers for one very good reason. The Brewers gifted us Craig Counsell. He's going to outmanage that prankster they have up there down the stretch.
That's his mentor, dude. That's his coach at Notre Dame and his mentor.
All right, listen. I also had a question, and I'll get off. This catcher that the Cubs brought up from the number one hitter in the organization the last two years, Ballesteros?
Moises Ballesteros.
Haven't heard his name mentioned. I'm just wondering about his development and his prospects, his future with the Cubs.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Moises Ballesteros, I do not believe, is going to be a big league catcher. I mean, at least with the Cubs. I do not believe that he is destined to be a big league catcher. He is hitting .337 right now. That kid is a big league bat. That is for sure. Not a ton of pop, but man, that is a big league contact bat with a beautiful swing. I think he is a DH first base pinch hit type who can be your backup catcher. I think that's who he is. And I don't think a team with championship aspirations is going to be having him as either your one or two in terms of a catcher. I could see him as a third catcher, September call-up, to have that lefty bat off the bench. That'd be pretty damn cool. I could see that. But I don't think much more than that from Ballesteros this year. How about Stan in Bellwood on the score? Good morning, Stanley. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Speaks. I'm enjoying the show as usual.
Thank you, sir.
And I just wanted to say here, this time of year, the 2 or 3 weeks between the All-Star game and the trade deadline is one of my favorite times of the baseball season. This is where, you know, the separation between men and boys, contenders and pretenders, take place here and, you know, take shape. I agree with you about Suarez. I mean, he would be a very nice addition for the Cubs or even the Yankees, you know, teams that are desperate for a third baseman. But I don't think he's a difference maker. To me, if you're really serious about winning the World Series in any given season, pitching is what talks more than anything else in the postseason. Now, the team that I'm going to be watching, and I just haven't heard this name mentioned at all. I picked the Texas Rangers to win the American League West, and I thought that they were one of the two or three top contenders for the pennant in the American League. They are a big, big disappointment. You know, everybody's talking about the Diamondbacks of conducting a fire sale. They're going to trade a lot of players, it looks like. But I think the one guy out there that would make the biggest difference and would put blood in everybody's urine in either league is Jacob DeGrom. You put him on the Yankees or the Blue Jays or the Cubs, they become the automatic favorite. Now, the Rangers are on the fringes of the playoffs right now, and I guess technically they're in the American League West race. But they don't look like they've got it this year. And I don't hear anybody mentioning DeGrom's name, and I'm just wondering what you think or what you're hearing. I know that would certainly be costly. He makes a ton of money, but he wouldn't be a rental. He's come back perfect. You know, from his injuries, any team would like to have him. And I think that that's the guy that the Cubs should be pursuing, you know, before somebody else gets him.
It's so exciting to be able in these weeks that you're describing to even think about such things. Like one of the greatest pitchers of this generation who is rolling and on fire right now. Almost had a perfect game a couple of starts ago. Is he available? Here's the thing. Number one, I don't know that Texas is going to take that far a step back. The other guy you'd think about is Nathan Eovaldi. I love Nate Eovaldi. And Eovaldi has two more years at around 25 mil per after this one. He just last week threw 7 2/3 and struck out 8, did Eovaldi. So, you know, you've got him and you've got DeGrom. I don't know that Texas is going to willingly step back that far with some of these big money guys. I don't know that they're going to be one of those teams that gets aggressive one direction, then aggressive the other direction when it's a down year, especially when it's on the fringe. They might just, you know, just sort of withstand it and see if they can make a push for a wild card. And if not, then just kind of survive as opposed to restocking. DeGrom's number might be prohibitive just before you even get anywhere. $38 million next year. He's making $40 mil this year, $38 next year, $37 the year after that. For a guy who's had Tommy John, what, three times already? And God, it's so intriguing and enticing because you give yourself a top of the rotation, dominant strikeout, swing and miss righty, to go with Boyd and Shota, and then game four can be Tyone, you know, of a playoff series. Oh, boy. That is some appetizing stuff right there. So dream on it. I don't believe it's going to happen. I don't believe Texas is going to make him available. Thanks for the call, Stan. Let's look at the White Sox system. Talk about their draft a little bit. Talk about what they have, what they still need, and who you might see on the big league club coming up. And between now and when we get out of here, Drew Pomerantz will be on the show, and you'll hear from Lucas Giolito as well on 670 The Score.